Happy New Year. Welcome to the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I am Kevin Fishbane, joined in studio this week by my partner in crime, Arthur Arkish. Also have our executive producer, Dan Mott, on hand. Arthur, we can call this the final podcast of the 2015 season and the first podcast of the 2016 offseason. We will keep giving you great Bears hot takes throughout the winter, spring, and summer in the next season. We're going to be joined, hopefully, by Hub Arkish later in the show. Our guest today will be Danny Ecker of Cranes Chicago. Talk a little sports business and what he noticed in terms of the buzz around the Bears this season. And Arthur, first of all, I love that I can say Happy New Year for like a 12-day stretch. It's like one of my favorite holidays because I can do that. We're taping this on, what is today, January 5th, January 6th? And I can still say Happy New Year. You can't say it's too late, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's really any other holidays where that applies. People aren't saying Happy Halloween on November 3rd.
Merry Christmas can go, you can kind of say that for a while leading in and maybe the day after. But Happy New Year, you get a good stretch there where you can really milk that.
And milk it we will.
Oh, for sure.
What do you say, 12, 13 days? So come this time next week if we're podcasting and you hear Kevin say Happy New Year again, be sure to call him out on it.
Or am I thinking about the Chinese New Year, Arthur? Where's your sensitivity to the rest of the world?
I'm very sorry. I should know better.
We are not going to talk about the Lions game because I assume nobody cares because it didn't mean a whole lot. It's not like we gleaned anything from it. The game ended. The Bears finished 6-10 on the year, last place in the NFC North. They'll have the 11th pick in the NFL draft. We're going to have some awesome draft content for you on our website, chicagofootball.com. Be sure to be on the lookout. Look at the music right there. Dan Mott's got that ready for our Pro Football Weekly Draft Preview Magazine, which will be coming out in February. And we'll be talking about a lot on this podcast. We'll bring in guests to break down the draft. Arthur and I will be at the Senior Bowl and the Combine, getting to know some of these prospects as well. But, you know, Arthur, this show, I want to briefly recap the season. I mean, we did the top 10 stories last week. We don't need to go back into that. But we'll talk a little bit about the way the season ended, our thoughts on Ryan Pace and John Fox's press conference. And the two big topics I want to talk about in today's show are Matt Forte and Alshon Jeffrey, so we'll get to those. But we're going to do a little special season-ending edition of the Three and Out.
One, two, three.
I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Three's up.
Three.
So, Arthur, we're going to do one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered from the entire season. We might have some overlap here, even though there's so many things to talk about, but there are only a few things that really resonated and looking at things that mean something moving forward. So we'll start on the positive end. If you can think of kind of the one biggest positive from the entire season, the first year under John Fox and Ryan Pace that you have today.
I'm going to go with the development of the outside linebacker position. I thought that it was a major concern heading into the year. Even after the signing of Pernell McPhee, you just didn't know what you were going to get, obviously, out of guys like Lamar Heisen and Willie Young. And I just felt that their growth, that their maturation, that their development, not only off the serious injuries, but at new positions, was a huge positive for the Bears. I don't think it necessarily will exclude them from addressing that position this offseason, but I do think it's one of the deeper ones on the roster. I do think it's one of the more important positions in Vic Fangio's defense. So to see the production and the development from those guys, and then to see what McPhee can be like at full strength, I think they probably feel pretty good about that position heading into the offseason.
They certainly do, and we'll get more into this the next couple months. I still think you can make an argument they should draft a speed edge rusher, too, to put in with those guys. You know, as Willie Young and Lamar Heisen get to the end of their contracts and the Bears try to figure out where to go with those guys, I'll go to the offense and I'll go with the obvious one, Jay Cutler. I think that the way that he played this year, the fact that he played well enough to know he is the quarterback for next season. They don't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to worry about it. We can talk about the offensive coordinator stuff later, but his quarterback rating was the best of his career. His turnovers were down, the lowest of his career. Of course, he has the one multi-interception game in the last game of the year after kind of having that 14-game streak without throwing more than one pick. And he did it. I mean, here were his skill players in the final game. Josh Bellamy, Mark Mariani, Deontay Thompson, Cameron Meredith, Kari Lee, and Rob Housler. And the response to all that is, who? I mean, these guys were the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th wide receivers and their 3rd and 4th tight ends if this was training camp. And the fact that he played as well as he did, and this was a thing all year long with those guys around him, I think was the biggest positive of the season.
Those are some excellent college football players.
Yeah, that's true.
They're still trying to carve out roles in the NFL, and we don't mean to make fun. They all did admirable jobs filling in, but yeah, it really speaks to what Cutler was able to accomplish, how resourceful he became this year.
What was your biggest negative?
It's a good segue because I have the Kevin White injury written down here. It's rather obvious, but I think it's twofold because obviously you still don't know what you have in the number 7 overall pick heading into his second season. Beyond that, if there was any hope that Kevin White was going to have the kind of bust out that was going to maybe give the Bears a little bit more leverage with Alshon Jeffrey this season, that obviously didn't happen. I have to believe the plan all along was to pair the two of them together, but now I think it kind of backs the Bears into a little bit of a corner. They have less of a choice on Alshon. And then again, you know, it's a red shirt season, so Kevin White may have the same learning curve entering his second year that maybe, you know, you expected him to kind of get out of the way after his rookie year. So there's still a lot of question marks with Ryan Pace's first overall draft pick. The good news is that the rest of that rookie class showed a ton of promise and really salvaged some of the disappointment in that regard.
Yeah, we talked about last week Kevin White being one of our top stories of the year. I mean, we talked about it so much. We wrote about it so much. You know, the defensive side of the ball, I think Vic Fangio deserves so much credit for what he did over there with what he had. And it's not like I expected there to be a lot of talent, and we knew what this team had, but you look ahead to the draft, and defensive end, inside linebacker, cornerback, and you can even argue safety are the biggest needs. And those were huge needs at this time last year. And none of the guys that they tried, and I know they were hamstrung a little bit. They only had so many draft picks, and they only could make so many moves in free agency. None of those guys really panned out. You know, Will Sutton didn't necessarily pan out. Jarvis Jenkins, I thought, was fine. He didn't do anything to make me think he's going to be a linchpin for that defense that they re-signed him. Shea McClellan didn't work out second half of the season. You know, Christian Jones, you go to the safety end, you can talk about the Antrel Roll injury that cost him, and he wasn't making plays before the injury.
Right.
Kyle Fuller did not make that leap. Tracy Porter struggled down the stretch. You don't have that true lockdown cornerback. So I think the fact that they still have so many needs on defense, you know, it was nice to see what Vic Fangio did, and I think there's some bright spots, Eddie Goldman, Bryce Callahan, John Timu, but I don't know if Callahan and Timu will be starting next year.
Right.
Adrian Amos was fine, but, you know, he's somebody that could be, that they could certainly draft a safety. So I think the fact that they couldn't hit on any of those positions with any of the guys they brought in, again, they weren't working with a ton, but you would hope that they could have hit on somebody.
Yeah, you can only I couldn't agree more. And I mean, I think when you dig a little bit deeper into the stats and certainly what Ryan Pace and John Fox talked about Monday, it was the impact plays that were missing, the turnovers, obviously, the third down defense, the splash plays. You know, obviously those are going to get a boost when you have these types of playmakers in place. I think they kind of did hit on Adrian Amos a little bit. We'll see if he's more than a number 3 safety in the future. But to have guys like Amos and Goldman and then to still, like you said, have all these needs is pretty telling with how bare the cupboard was, if you will, entering the first year of this makeover.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to be too hard on Amos. And one of the things, too, about him is we know from Vic Fangio, if Amos wasn't playing well, he wouldn't have been playing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it worked with this defense. These guys got benched left and right. So there's something there. He has to make more plays next season. And if we can go back to the positives, I think if you look at the contributions from that rookie class, Goldman, Langford, Amos, Gristou struggled, but he got a lot of important experience. They know mm-hmm. what they have in him and what they can get from him moving forward. You look at the undrafted rookies, Callahan, Kari Lee, who they brought over. They claimed him. So, you know, John Timu late in the season. So they were able to find some stuff from some of these rookies that can give you some hope that this personnel department, scouting staff, is at least on the right start, because it all comes down to Ryan Pace moving forward. And if you trust his scouting, his eye, then you got to feel good about where this team's going.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think it was an encouraging start to be able to get all the production you did out of the rookie class without getting anything from your top pick still is encouraging. And for Adrian Amos, no, he didn't come up with the takeaway, but yes, he did lead the whole defense in snaps. And to start 16 games as a fifth-round rookie safety really is an accomplishment in and of itself. I think he's a smart, athletic kid, and I don't think we should write him off as a future starter just yet.
Briefly on the Ryan Pace, John Fox press conference, my favorite part about it, 23 minutes, and I think Ryan Pace talked for about 21 of them. We hadn't talked to the guy on the record since before the season started, and I think we all know we would have gotten a whole lot from John Fox detail-wise, and Ryan Pace, he talked about some individual players, we gleaned some stuff from him, but it was at least nice to talk to him. Certainly it was about 60 minutes shorter than the last GM,
right?
Which I don't think is a bad thing necessarily when you're talking about the successes of that regime compared to this one.
And probably still about 22 minutes longer than John Fox and the PR czar over there, Scott Hagel, would have preferred because he tried to cut us off on about six or seven occasions.
That's true. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But what would you maybe ask Ryan Pace if you could that we didn't get to ask him? Still lingering questions you have for the GM.
I was curious, and I didn't actually get a question in, so I really have no one to blame but myself, but I just would like to know what he learned from his first foray into free agency, because I didn't think that went quite as well as the first draft experience. Antrell Roll, Eddie Royal, I think they only can really be classified as disappointments given the money they received and the contributions they made. So I'd love to just hear, perhaps if he had any regrets, I wouldn't expect him to say so, but I had some concerns maybe about the Eddie Royal signing in particular. I'd love to know if you maybe gave him a little bit of truth serum, what he would say in hindsight about those moves.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple positions, and I think this is one of those things we'll learn by his actions, not his words. What does he think about the running back position? How much does he think he needs to pay to running backs? What about kicker? He's got a kicker making $3 million next year.
His name didn't come up, right?
Is that something that he believes is worth it? Because I think different GMs think differently about some of those positions. So, I would have liked, but again, I wasn't even going to ask those questions. We weren't going to get straight answers on that.
Yeah.
Would have liked a little more detail on the Jeremiah Ratliff thing. I know it's well in the past, but that was maybe, his worst moment in terms of how to handle that situation. Mm-hmm. But he admitted, he said there's no GM manual. There's no kind of way to go about it. But I think the biggest topic that we will talk about throughout the show and came up a lot is Alshon Jeffrey. And that's going to be such an important thing for Ryan Pace to sort out, is franchise tag, long-term deal, or let him test the market. I think we can rule out long-term deal, Arthur.
Yeah, I do. I think we could probably also rule out let him test the market because you just can't let a talent get away, that type of a talent, without getting anything in return. But who knows? I mean, we've been surprised before, obviously.
And we're joined right now by our guest on this program. It's a friend of mine. So by the transitive property, he's a friend of the program. That's Danny Ecker of Crane Chicago. Hey, Danny.
Hey, Kevin. You're a good friend, too.
Well, I wasn't going to go too far, but thank you. You are as well. And Danny writes for Crane Chicago, covers Chicago sports business and the buzz around town. And one of the reasons I wanted Danny to come on the show was not to talk about his Cleveland Browns, at least till the end of the interview. But Danny does a good job covering this whole thing, Fantex, which is something that Alshon Jeffrey is involved in. It's a company where you can essentially buy stock in individual players, and there's involving how much that player gets or how much this company gets if that player gets future earnings, and that's something that the Bears or Alshon Jeffrey or the people trying to handicap what's coming for the Bears star receiver are going to have to figure out how that factors in his salary. So, Danny, I'm going to ask you a vague question, which at our alma mater I would have gotten yelled at for, but what is this whole thing, and how does it really affect, if it does, Alshon Jeffrey as he enters free agency?
Well, it's a unique concept here. Fantex, this company out of San Francisco, started this up a couple of years ago, and they've only had a few players that they've done this with so far. But essentially what they do is they buy a percentage of an athlete's future earnings. So in Alshon Jeffrey's case, last year they paid Alshon Jeffrey almost $8 million, and in return they get 13% of his future earnings. And what they do with that is they go public with it, essentially. They start selling stock, and you can invest and get a share of it. And that future earnings includes his playing contract deals that he signs in the future, any endorsement deals, any appearance fees, things like that, signings, even after his football career is over, gets into, you know, if he goes into television or any sort of marketing deals after that, you can make an investment and try to get a piece of that. So, unfortunately for Fantex, it hasn't really, you haven't seen a lot of trading volume. They have their own little platform, and they've gone through all these SEC regulations, and you know, it hasn't really caught on as much as they'd hoped it will. So actually what they're doing now, they're trying to lump a bunch of these athletes together into one stock that they can offer on the NASDAQ, hoping that'll maybe drum up a bit more excitement. But as it relates to Alshon Jeffrey's pending free agency, I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's not necessarily something that you that I think weighs in his mind or in the team's mind at all. It's, I don't think it's really much of a factor there. I think if you're a potential investor, you know, you might maybe you will see a little bit of more traffic and people actually putting up money into what is obviously a risky stock. But if you kind of know that he's going to cash in with a big deal, you know, you might you might see the stock price go up. And they do pay dividends to some of the investors too. Alshon Jeffrey has not seen one yet. But, you know, that's something that for some of the other athletes have done this. Vernon Davis is one. They've paid dividends to investors so far. But it's interesting. It's an interesting concept. Part of his prospectus, actually. They have a whole prospectus when they had an IPO for Alshon Jeffrey's earnings. And they took a guess. They had to kind of say, okay, well, here's what we think Alshon Jeffrey will sign his next contract with the Bears for. And they pegged it at, and this was based on kind of what the market was doing at the time and what looking at other athlete contracts, wide receivers. They said that he might get somewhere in the 6-year, $79 million range, which would be pretty a pretty big deal, obviously, for him. But, again, that's a prospectus from Fantex. And, you know, now we've had a whole season since that came out, and we'll see what happens next.
Danny, it certainly does seem like an interesting idea, something we haven't really seen prior to, you know, the unleashing of this company, if you will. I have to wonder, it doesn't look like there's a lot of huge names on here. You mentioned Vernon Davis. Obviously, Alshon Jeffrey's a big name. Marion Foster, I think, is another name that's been involved. But do you know what their efforts have been to try and kind of reel in some of the true, you know, household names throughout the NFL? And what's the involvement in other sports, or is this limited to the NFL at this point?
Well, they've looked at other sports. They do have one that's coming in the pipeline for baseball. I'm blanking, unfortunately, on the player's name right now, but he is not one of the top, you know, one of the household names. I think, to be honest, from a player's standpoint, it's a little bit of insurance here because they're able to kind of, based on their popularity now, even if it is just a flash in the pan or if they're popular for a little bit, and they have a chance to cash in, they can really realize some significant revenue up front and sacrifice, you know, potentially. I mean, in some ways it's a little weird because they could be betting on themselves maybe not having as lucrative a future as you think, but they're hedging a little bit, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know if they've if they have tried, you know, with the biggest name they've really tried with this was Arian Foster,
right,
who was the first one, and unfortunately he's had so many injuries that they ended up basically just scrapping the whole thing recently. But, yeah, I think it's for something that if you're a top player, boy, I mean, if you've got a really bright future and you think so and all the experts think so, you know, I think you might not necessarily want to give away, even, you know, sell a certain percentage of your future income, which could be even higher than you even estimate, so.
Joined right now by Danny Ecker. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny Ecker, E-C-K-E-R. Check out his stuff at chicagobusiness.com. Trying to understand how this Alshon Jeffrey Fantex situation is, essentially letting Danny explain it to me on our podcast so that I better understand it, a selfish thing that I'm doing, but that's okay. It's a podcast. One more thing on this, Danny. So let's say he gets the franchise tag, which would be a one-year, we don't know the value yet, but maybe, you know, $13 or $14 million, which is all guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea is then they can maybe project a bigger deal if he stays healthy next year. But if he gets that 1 year, $14 million, just that in a nutshell, what does that mean?
Well, it means that, I mean, to be honest, it depends on whether, for his stock price, it depends on whether investors decide that they want to jump on board. All it really means is that Fantex itself, the company, gets 13% of that. And, you know, whether They can use that to pay dividends. I would say for investors, I think we'll likely see a dividend paid out to investors once he signs this deal. At this point, until there's a large amount of trade volume and they can get enough people really interested in this and putting money up for it, I think, his contracts that he signs for investors will just have a very little meaning until they can really get enough people on board.
Danny, it's good stuff on Alshon. There's a couple other links that Kevin was nice enough to share. Stories you've written recently. I'm curious about one of them about the Bears' sort of citywide interest kind of dropping a little bit in 2015. And I'm going to selfishly bring another topic into the discussion now too, and that's the Chicago Cubs. I know this is always going to be a Bears town, but reading your story here, it looks like there is a little bit of disappointment in terms of social media engagement with these Bears. Do you think the Cubs have any relation to that, or is this strictly just the Bears' product on the field and why how this is part of a rebuild right now?
Yeah, well, it's such an interesting dynamic when you look at the way that the teams and their popularity and what's going on kind of play off each other and affect each other, because they do. As far as the Twitter traffic goes, I think that was probably had a lot more to do with just the fact that viewership overall was down of Bears games this season, and I think there were a lot of people that kind of had maybe somewhat low expectations. They certainly wanted to see what the new regime might bring in, and they did, but you just didn't have as much chatter going on. And I think people kind of, it was a rebuilding year. They knew that. And so people weren't necessarily turning to Twitter to vent frustration or to praise them. I think it just, it was a bit of a drop off there. But as far as, I wouldn't say the Cubs really had much to do with that. But they definitely have had, there was a little bit of overlap there. In October, when really this was a Cubs focused town,
right,
that you had, I think, that might have affected, I think, some of the some of what people were spending their time talking about. Certainly it certainly might have affected what people were tweeting about and discussing on social media during the week. But overall, I would say that it didn't have, the Cubs surge did not necessarily impact the Bears so much, but it certainly, I think from a business standpoint, it's a little bit different because, really when you had, it was kind of interesting if you looked at October when a lot of different companies that sponsor sports teams in this market and advertise with them are setting their budgets for 2016, the Cubs were as high as you could be, and people were kind of having to work the Cubs into their plans, and the Bears were a little bit on the back burner, which is not usually the case in October. So, it'd be interesting to see whether that has any sort of impact now this year.
It's kind of funny to look at your story about the social media buzz around this team fizzling this season, because, and I think we see this from a web traffic standpoint, certainly from a callers to a radio show standpoint, but when the team, I think I remember looking back at it, the Twitter spiked last year in Green Bay when everything hit the fan and everything,
yeah,
fell apart for this team. And I remember our, web traffic was off the charts. Everyone's calling and wanting Hub to fire everyone, then learning Hub didn't have that kind of power. He might think he does, but he doesn't. Just looking around other teams in Chicago and other teams around the league, do you see that where when a team is just kind of drab and mediocre, even if it's in the NFL, which is the most popular sport in America, that you got to either be on one end of the spectrum to really get that, whether it's social media buzz or even just the fan engagement involved with the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's you're exactly right that the losses tend to pull out the social media venting more than the wins. I mean, like that 55-14 loss to Green Bay last year was one of the top 10 most tweeted about games in the NFL last season. And the most tweeted about game this year was also a Bears game, or also a Packers game rather, but it was the win on Thanksgiving night. But, I don't know. It's interesting to see how fans behave and how they react to this. I think everyone would be much happier and have a lot more to talk about if you had maybe some more nationally televised games, a little bit more exciting on-field product, and obviously some more wins.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be interesting to see what type of impact this does have when the primetime slate is announced for next year. One more for you, Danny, and it's kind of turning the page a little bit, or kind of switching gears, I guess. Can you just tell us a little bit about the overall impact in year one that the NFL draft coming to Chicago had, if there's anything, any insight you can share on that, and maybe, you know, just the level of promise or the level of satisfaction that the city of Chicago received from the draft, maybe what kind of residual effect there was?
Well, I think they did. It was good enough that they are bringing it back, obviously. You know, I think it's really interesting, kind of the backstory of the draft and how it arrived here. Because several years ago, there was some talk behind the scenes between the city of Chicago and the NFL, and they were looking at the potential for doing some sort of convention. They wanted to say, okay, well, you see these conventions. You know, as they try to continue making this a year-round product, you see conventions in other sports that really serve that purpose. And they were talking about, well, maybe we could do something like that, maybe at McCormick Place or in Chicago is a great market for it. And eventually it evolved into what we saw last summer, with this draft that was sort of half draft, half convention. And I think that, the city, the weather helped and the city showed off well. I think it's going to be tweaked a little bit, but still to a big grand stature this year. And I don't think that Chicago is going to be the long-term permanent destination of this, because I think they can take it on the road and really do some great things with it. But there's certainly I think it was definitely a great weekend for some downtown businesses and put the city on a national television and really, really all over the world, get some great publicity for the city for a few days. And hopefully we start to see a little bit of spoils from that. But, at this point, I just hope that they can kind of keep it here and hope for the same kind of great weather this year, because without it, it would have been a lot less fun.
I'll leave you with this, Danny. Why should you be hired as the Cleveland Browns general manager? Or head coach if you want that job instead.
Oh, man.
Or
well, let's see. Well, let's see. Going back to the I would say it probably goes back to my experience running the intramural football program of our fraternity, Kevin. That would probably take me back, and that's what I would point to as a really key experience. Plus, speaking of the NFL draft, I think I might have been one of the only people that actually made the 20-yard field goal that you could make at the draft.
Oh, there you go.
I saw a bunch of other guys. So, I would say that I've got a little bit of experience there. And, besides, the Browns have had, I think this is now 8 straight years. For 8 straight years, the Browns have had either a new head coach, general manager, starting quarterback, or owner. And I think in 6 of those 8 years, at least 2 of those have been the case. So, at this point, it's kind of just a random point to a guy on the street and put him in the front office for the Browns.
And you're not just any guy in the street. I mean, you're in Crane, Chicago's Danny Ecker. And I will be your reference when it comes to intramural sports. I can't wait to get that call from Jimmy Haslam wanting to know what went wrong in the 2008 intramural flag football season. But I'll tell him it was not all on you. So
I would hire you as my chief strategy officer.
I appreciate that. Danny Ecker, Crane Chicago. Go ahead, follow him on Twitter for all Chicago business sports stuff. And we're taping this on Wednesday. I'll be seeing Danny later at the Northwestern Ohio State game. And Danny, it's probably a good thing that Hub did not join this interview, because he is a Michigan man. And if he knew we had an Ohio State fan on the podcast, things could have gotten a little ugly. So,
well, unfortunately for the Buckeyes, they're an underdog tonight, and they should be. So it's going to be a fun one tonight.
It certainly will. Well, go ahead, go follow Danny's stuff. And if you want to learn more about this Alshon Jeffrey situation that I kind of understand now, go read his work at Crane Chicago. Danny, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So, Arthur, do you understand it a little better?
A little bit. I mean,
I kind of wanted Hub to be here, because Hub's the one, actually, I hear him on the score. He gets questions about this a fair amount, and he does. And actually, Hub explains it really well, and I've read Danny's articles about it. I think it is kind of interesting that someone like Alshon Jeffrey, who is, part of his next salary is going to go to this thing, and then people can, invest their stock in the guy. And boy, I'm sure Fantex probably wasn't thrilled to see him being missing 6 games.
Right.
This season, because it said, and now we can get into this Alshon Jeffrey discussion about what you do with him. I think the franchise tag is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's going to be roughly $14 million next year. We can double check that, but that's the number I have in my head. And as I said previous to Danny joining us, I don't think that when you get one of these rare talents, you can let them get away without anything in return. And I also don't think that the Bears can afford to go long term, given all these soft tissue injuries that cost Jeffrey, what was it, 8 or 9 games this year. So it's a tough predicament. It's certainly Ryan Pace entering some uncharted waters, obviously, in terms of this type of a negotiation. But boy, you saw what type of an impact player he was when he was on the field, and that's the reason I think we both agree he's going to get $14 million in a franchise tag next year.
I think, and Hubs talked about this before a lot, let's say Eddie Royal played 14, 15 games and was as effective as we thought he was going to be when we saw him in Bourbonnais.
Right.
Let's say Kevin White played and we saw, even if it was a few games, we saw a glimpse of what he could do. Let's say Marquise Wilson stayed healthy. Again, these are all kind of ridiculous hypotheticals, but right. I think if you put all that out there, you could look at Alshon Jeffery and make an argument for letting him test the market and just, you know, moving on, and but you have no idea what you have at the position, and I'm a firm believer, if you have someone who's talented as Alshon Jeffery, even if you don't know how many games he's going to play next year, you keep him in your control as long as you can.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was actually an interesting argument you just made, if I'm understanding it right. It was almost saying that by all the other people not being there, when Jeffrey was on the field, you saw more what he was capable of in that role, something we wondered about entering the season, of course, because of Brandon Marshall's presence the past couple of years. So, yeah, that's an interesting spin on it.
Well, the reason I bring up that spin is because there's – you know, we talked about this with Ryan Pace, and there was a comments from Jay Cutler about these soft tissue injuries, and I think the players echo it, and a friend of the program, Pat Finley, had a good article about this over the Sun Times a couple weeks ago. They were all kind of like, this is something that you have to manage as a player. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a give and take. The sports science people, you know, the Jen Gibsons of the world who work with the Bears and all these people, they can only do so much, the training staff, the doctors. You as a player have to do it, and look, Alshon Jeffery did a lot of work with Brandon Marshall in the offseason when mm-hmm. Brandon was in Chicago. Say what you will about Brandon Marshall, and we could talk about him for a long time. I haven't been around too many players that worked as hard as Brandon Marshall.
Right.
And this is not to knock Alshon Jeffery's work ethic, but it was a question of his coming out of college. And you wonder how many of these injuries could he have avoided if he did things differently. And I'm going full negative here. I understand that, but if the Bears thought that he should have done a better job and they don't think he can fix it and they don't want to put $14 million on a guy who they think is just going to continue to have these injuries come mm-hmm. up, you can see why they'd pass him out. But that's only if they knew what they had in the position.
Right. So maybe that is the potential argument for a scenario in which Alshon is able to escape. I still don't see it happening, but no, it's an interesting point. And just to kind of piggyback off what you just said, John Fox said in February that Alshon wasn't always in good enough shape last year. So it's not like all this should come completely out of left field. And like you said, that was part of the scouting reports in college as well. So, it's one more interesting angle to kind of look at with regard to all this. And it's a good point about Pat Finley's story. I actually didn't read Finley's story, but I'm sure because I was in a couple of those scrums where Jay Cutler was asked about the soft tissue injuries, Matt Forte were asked about the soft tissue injuries, and they both, like you just said, mentioned that it's a lot on the player. So, we'll see. It's going to be fascinating, and it lends into the – it's a nice juxtaposition because there's also no one who works harder in that Bears locker room than Matt Forte. So that's one of the many intangibles.
Look at you segueing over to 22. I saw that. I see you transitioning. Acting nonchalant about it.
Dan
Mott, you noticed that, our executive. He was all over that.
And I got to throw actually a hat tip. The third member of our team, Nate Atkins, who you haven't heard much from this year on our podcast, but he did write a very good column that you can find on chicagofootball.com that kind of gets into that idea of Forte's intangibles and how what he heard coming out of Hallis Hall Monday was all this talk about looking for the guys who are going to work harder than everyone else, be a team player more than everyone else. And then on a 6-10 team, are you going to find a way to chase the one guy you know is that out of the locker room? So you guys should definitely check it out. I thought it was a really good column.
Let's move on to Matt Forte. And to start the conversation about Matt, I'm going to read a poll that we offered our readers today. About 600 of you actually participated, so thank you for that. The question was, who's going to come back? So the options were both Jeffrey and Forte return. Jeffrey returns and Forte does not. Forte returns and Jeffrey does not, or neither returns. So what would be your vote right now?
Well, I'm not saying I would agree with it, but my hunch of what's going to happen is that Alshon is going to be back and Matt Forte is not.
And that's my hunch as well. So that was the winner at 57%. Mm-hmm. Both of them coming back is 31%. Only 4% of you think that Matt Forte returns and Jeffrey doesn't, which I think would be a really big surprise.
Yep.
And then I also think it would be a big surprise if neither return, and that was 8% of the vote. So, all right. Matt Forte is handled everything with a ton of class, like you'd expect from a guy like Matt Forte. I thought it was really cool, and I wrote about this after the game. That touchdown he scored meant nothing for the game, for the season, but that was about as loud as Soldier Field got, and there were 10,000 unused tickets that day,
right.
And that place erupted. I mean, it was really I'm going to be honest, I got some chills. It was a cool experience just to see Matt Forte, who's given so much to this team and this community, have that. And, you know, he's saying all these goodbyes, but he also kind of joked, like, he could come back. And he's talked about this. He hasn't said hometown discount, but you know he'd prefer to play in Chicago. So let's talk contracts here. Frank Gore, 3 years, $12 million. I think Matt Forte is going to ask for and deserves more than that, right?
I think so. Yeah, Gore was 2 years older, didn't have the overall production for as long a period of time. And, I think Forte is going to be worth more than that. I think there was $6.5 million guaranteed on the Gore deal. And a lot of people actually wondered, we should mention what Ryan Grigson was doing when he gave Frank Gore that contract. So
people wonder a lot what Ryan Grigson or anybody in that Colts run
and if they were
doing.
Watching that bizarre press conference that Jimmy Irsay held on Tuesday night, they were left wondering yeah, about a lot of things. So.
Yeah, so I'll throw out some numbers here. I could see Forte getting 3 years, 15 or 14 and a half with 8 guaranteed, because you know his people are going to use Frank Gore as a benchmark.
Right.
And the Bears are going to have anywhere between $50 and $60 million of cap space. They're going to be in the top 3 or 4 in terms of most cap space in the league when free agency opens. So they're certainly going to have the room to do it if they want to do it. And I think they're going to give him a fair offer. I shouldn't say that. There's a chance that Ryan Pace and John Fox have already decided that they're ready to move on. And maybe they don't feel like they need to give him an offer. But I feel like that McCaskey's very hands off. But I feel like that's where George knocks on Ryan Pace's door and says, "Hey, you got to at least offer. You got to do something better than this, because he's meant a lot to this organization." So I don't really know, but let's assume they're going to offer him something. That's a safe assumption.
I think so. Yeah, and I don't believe it's going to be a lowball offer. I don't know if it's because George McCaskey will get involved or not, but it's important to mention, because I know George wasn't thrilled with the way a few of the most recent all-time Bears have walked out the door on kind of bad terms. And you can go back to John Fox's opening press conference in January, and I believe he said he was hoping to, or maybe it was Ryan Pace's, I can't remember, but they talked about maybe trying to mend some bridges with Brian Urlacher, and seemed to show an understanding that they don't want to kind of chase these guys out on bad terms like that. But it's a football decision.
Right.
Sentiment isn't going to get overly involved here.
Okay, so here's my, and I talked about you, talked about this with mm-hmm. you off the air. Here's my concern: if they actually give him the contract and he returns, let's say they give him the 3 years, $15 million, and he becomes what he was this year, which essentially he would take 55% of the snaps and Langford would take 45%, something like that. It would ebb and flow depending on the flow of the game,
right.
Which I think Forte has been open and he'd be okay with that. It would give him some more time in the league, and he complements Langford well. If he wants to play for a winning team, I think the Bears are going to be competitive next year. The way these contracts work and the way cap space is, I would be stunned if Matt Forte finished that contract. Guys, you just don't see players at that stage in their career finish a contract. And that would then lead him to decide to retire. But maybe the much more awkward situation, again, I'm getting very cynical here and looking at a very specific hypothetical. My hypothetical is the Bears give him a 3-year whatever million-dollar contract. He returns, and then after 2016 – they're forced to find some way to cut him or make him take a salary cut. And they don't want to have to do that, and he's not going to have to be in that situation either.
You call it cynical, but for a 31-year-old running back, it's probably realistic is also a fair way of describing the situation. Now, I'm by no means a salary cap expert. I'm sure Kevin has a much better grasp on that.
No, don't be so sure about that.
But my understanding is that often teams will try and backload deals in these instances, but for the Chicago Bears, who are going to be flush with cap space and may know that they're only going to get another year, maybe two, out of Forte. Maybe they front load the deal with the guaranteed money.
I think this is a deal that you front load, and that does make it, you know, cheaper to keep somebody going forward.
It doesn't avoid that potentially sticky situation of having to say, all right, Forte, that's it. But maybe NFL fans at this point are wise enough to the whole, you know, history or just simple, you know, examples of these 30-year-old backs going downhill that maybe it wouldn't be so bad. I don't know.
So here's a follow-up question, and this will segue us into wrapping up the show. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the teams in the playoffs. Okay, I'm going to name a team, and you say yes or no, that team would love to have Matt Forte right now as their number one running back.
Okay.
Okay, so in the NFC, Washington.
Yes.
Would you take Forte over Morris and Jones?
Absolutely.
Green Bay?
No.
Minnesota? No.
Nope.
Seattle?
I'd say no, because they have shown an ability to find these guys from under, you know, under a rock.
Right.
Like Thomas Rawls, I think that's their back of the future.
Arizona?
No, I love David Johnson. He's a low cost investment. He's a guy that gets compared to Matt Forte.
Carolina.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't think you can really trust a Jonathan Stewart. I don't think they know what they have in Cameron Artis Payne. Yeah, perhaps.
Right now, would Pittsburgh take him?
No, because no. When he's healthy, Le'Veon Bell might be the best back in football.
Denver.
Yeah, I think Forte would be a great fit for that Kubiak offense, and they have no idea what they have in Ronnie Hillman or C.J. Anderson.
New England?
Yes, there's nothing there right now.
Kansas City?
Probably not.
Probably not. Houston?
Houston would also, definitely, I think, love to have him. Bill O'Brien, yeah, would be a big fan of him.
Okay, that long-winded thing was to say that there's going to be a postseason team that would throw money at Matt Forte. Because there's a lot of teams there that just would love to have a guy who could be number one running back but not need to carry the ball that much, and they'd be willing to give him a 3-year, $15 million deal. That's what happened with Frank Gore. The Colts thought they were going to be a playoff team, and they took the chance on Frank Gore. Now, the Patriots are an obvious one, but they don't give a lot of money to running backs.
No.
So I'm not sure if they'd be. But
and this is equally obvious, a team that's not in the postseason, but you have to think the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones, who would throw a lot of money at a back like this, would also love to have a Matt Forte. They have a need there as well.
So,
and think they could be back in the playoffs as long as Romo's healthy.
Yeah, so you mean if you're a team that you think you're going to be in the playoffs, you think Matt Forte is the missing piece,
mm-hmm.
I think you do that. All right, so I think we exhausted Alshon Jeffrey, Matt Forte on the show. Let's go into some game picks for the weekend. How about that? Dan, you're going to join us for this?
Sure, I'll get in on this.
All right. So Saturday is the AFC game. Arthur, I think Houston plays Kansas City in the afternoon on Saturday every year in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It just certainly seems that way.
That late afternoon slot.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which is always just, although I think was it Indianapolis, Kansas City a couple years ago? It was a really fun game. It was high scoring.
Yeah, that was the crazy comeback for Andrew Luck. They fell way behind.
So Houston is, they're hosting that game, but Kansas City is the favorites. Mm-hmm. All pretty much road favorites this week. Let's go around. Dan Mott.
I like Houston. I'm gonna go.
Okay.
I'm gonna take Houston.
He's a JJ Watt fan.
CJ Fedorowicz fan.
That's
a Johnsburg native.
That's
there we go.
True.
No, I do. I think that I know Houston's the other underdog, but I like Houston in this game.
Arthur?
Yeah, Chiefs. I'm impressed with the way Houston has responded, given the quarterback instability. But more impressed with the way the Chiefs have responded from their terrible start, losing Jamal Charles. They're the hottest team in football, and they get Justin Houston back this week. So I think he goes into Houston and does some things.
Yeah, the Chiefs are just rolling, and Houston's a weird team. They've looked so bad a couple times this season. I know their defense stepped up a few times, but I think the way Kansas City's been playing, I got to give them the edge. All right, the night game on Saturday night. I'm excited for this game. But I'm also worried it could be a blowout. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. Dan?
I'm taking Cincinnati.
All right. You like A.J. McCarron.
I do.
All right. Roll Tide.
I love what I saw from A.J. McCarron for a half, obviously. Then the wheels came off. I'm still going to go with the Bengals. I like their roster better overall. And it's funny because I think Kevin is thinking the blowout may come from the other side.
Well, if Pittsburgh, I could see Pittsburgh winning in a blowout. I could not see Cincinnati winning a blowout, if that makes sense. So I'm going to take Pittsburgh. I hate taking all the favorites.
What about D'Angelo? Who's going to run the ball? Doesn't look like it's going to be. All right.
He's fine.
That's strength that's by to Dan's case.
Can Michael Vick, can they make him act and make him run?
That's an idea.
Thinking outside the box here like Todd Haley would. All right, so Sunday, the early game is Seattle-Minnesota. In Minnesota, on the sidelines on Westwood One, if you're listening in Chicago, I think that game's on 670. Mm-hmm. Hub Arkish will be braving the 6-degree weather on the sideline for you. So definitely tune in to see how that sounds and to make sure he's doing okay.
You know all the NFL films footage where you see the steam rising off the ball, the players' heads? I don't need to say anything else. Watch for Hub on the sideline Saturday or Sunday.
Which reminds me, we've gone the entire podcast without discussing Brian Urlacher's hair.
Oh my.
And if Hub.
Sorry, podcast listeners.
If Hub will do that one day. I think it'd be fun to get a Chicago football pledge. Like, if we raise a certain amount of money, Hub has to do the Urlacher hair treatment.
That could be one of the better traffic drivers we have. Yeah, there's an idea.
And, of course, I'm saying that because Hub's nowhere near the room, so he wouldn't slug me. All right, so Seattle is it's a big favorite in Minnesota. I think this is probably the biggest road favorite since Seattle and New Orleans, when New Orleans was the road favorite in Seattle, but Seattle won that game a few years ago. Dan Mott, who do you like?
I'm going with Seattle. I think that I think they're more experienced, obviously, in the playoffs. So
Arthur loves the Vikings. Is he going to take the Vikings?
I cover the Vikings. I am impartial, but I'm a big Mike Zimmer fan.
Well,
no,
I think
you
realize
it.
How good the Vikings can be, better than I think a lot of people do, because you know team very well.
Yeah, I predicted them to go to the playoffs this year. I didn't think they would unseat the Packers, but nonetheless, like I said, big Zimmer fan, big fan of what they've accomplished this year. It doesn't matter. Seattle is way too hot right now. They beat the Vikings 35-7, I think, 6-7 weeks ago. So I imagine this one will be more competitive, and then I imagine the outcome will be the same ultimately.
Perfect timing. The sideline man for that game in Minnesota, the frozen tundra that will be Minnesota on Sunday, Hub Arkish is in studio with us. Hi, Hub.
So here's the deal, guys. As we record, which is a few days in advance, checking the weather forecast, right now the prediction is for 45-50 Saturday night in Cincinnati. It is for 50-55 Sunday afternoon in Washington, D.C. There's a roof in Houston, and the prediction for Viking Seattle is 6. And I'd be the only guy on the broadcast who'll be outside. So I'm delighted to have the work. I'm thrilled they give me the job. But if I said I was looking forward to it, I'd be lying. So it's good.
They knew they only had one tough guy sideline reporter who could handle it.
You should wear one of those big Russian hats. Yeah, can you do that?
I've done a couple like this before. There is nothing you can wear to make it enjoyable. I mean, 6 is 6. And so the only thing I could hope for is that they're saying the front is literally coming in Saturday night. It's supposed to be in the 20s in Minneapolis on Saturday. So maybe it'll be 12 hours late. It is. I think it's the second best football game of the weekend. I'm really looking forward to watching Saturday night with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. But other than that, I think the most interesting one is the Minnesota-Seattle game.
Arthur and I and Dan made our picks for the two AFC games on Saturday. So why don't you give us your picks for those two games?
You know, the tough one for me is Kansas City and Houston, because I think Kansas City is definitely the better team. But that Houston defense is so good, and they're at home, and that could be an interesting football game. I just don't know. You know, it's ironic that Jamal Charles goes down in the Bears game. That's their last loss. And yet behind Chikandrick West and Spencer Ware, but I think about those guys against that Houston defense, and I'm not so sure. I do know that Alex Smith will take care of the football. I also don't know if Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce is enough of a weapon. But the flip side of it is that the Kansas City defense is as good or better than Houston's, and Houston's offense is awful, even with Brian Hoyer back. So I'm picking the Chiefs. I think it'll be a close defensive struggle, but I just think the Chiefs are the better team. And the Saturday night game, I'm sorry, but I just Pittsburgh's the hotter team. I know they kind of had the brain fart a couple weeks ago, but then they bounced back. They got the win over Cleveland. That wasn't as easy as the score suggests either, but they're in now, and now it becomes a whole different thing. Cincinnati's a really well-balanced football team. I won't hide from it. I think they're as good or maybe even better off with A.J. McCarron than Andy Dalton. I still don't trust Andy Dalton in these situations. But I think the bigger problem, to be honest with you, is Marvin Lewis. And Marvin Lewis, good football coach, but he was losing big playoff games before Andy Dalton got there. So I got to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers in that one. I know picking both the road teams is kind of strange, but I think they're the better football team.
It's not strange. I did it.
Marvin Lewis still looking for his first playoff win. Is that right?
No, I think he got maybe. He's either got one or this could. He could be still looking for his first one.
I don't think he's won in the playoffs yet.
Did you take Minnesota or Seattle?
I'm taking Seattle, and I think they'll cover the 7 points.
Are you allowed to make a pick for that game on the podcast?
Yeah, theoretically, I should.
You can at least talk about
the game. It's our podcast. Yeah, I'm not talking about the point spread. I don't even know what it was. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear Arthur say that. you know, I mean, I don't care. I have no rooting interest. I can tell you that I think that Seattle is a much better football team than Minnesota. What's interesting, though, is, and I'm kind of half kidding but completely serious, that is the weather forecast for this game. Nobody prefers to play in that weather, but the Vikings obviously are going to be a little more prepared, a little more, you know, I won't say, I don't know that they've done it before either. It's been a pretty mild winter. But people don't realize that Seattle, it rarely gets all that cold up there. It can get damp and wet, and you know, but you can also have some 60-degree days at this time of the year. I think the conditions definitely create a slight advantage for Minnesota. The flip side of that, though, is I'm just not a Teddy Bridgewater guy, and there's no arguing the way Russell Wilson has been playing. What's curious to me is what's going to happen with Marshawn Lynch, because at the end of the day, you look at the two Super Bowl runs, it's all about going beast mode, but he hasn't been there for 7 weeks now. Everything I hear is he is going to play, or at least be available to play, and I don't know. You know, does he come back with fresh legs and go beast mode right away? Does he need some time to settle in? How does the conditions impact him? We're used to seeing him with his big Russian hat on, so that shouldn't be that unusual. But Seattle is just, they're much more experienced, and they're a better football team. They're much better at quarterback, and so I don't know that it'll be easy, but I think you have to probably lean towards Seattle.
And let's the last game of the weekend, Green Bay at Washington, which I know on our radio show, our weekly show, Chicago Football Now, I think every week I said something along the lines of, well, maybe this week Aaron Rodgers and the offense turn it on. But they didn't do it for 17 weeks, so I'm struggling to handicap this game. Arthur, what are you thinking about Green Bay, Washington?
I'm in your boat. I really have no idea. I don't think Washington is as bad a football team as I know Hub's about to say they are, but at the same time, I don't think Green Bay is as good as Hub maybe is about to say they are either. It's just, it's troubling. At least Washington signed Kerry Williams off the street to play cornerback, so maybe that is the help that the Packers need. And I haven't even made a pick until we're sitting here doing it right now. I'm going to pick Green Bay, and I'm not going to give you a reason why because I have no idea.
Hub?
I love the fact that he thinks because I spawned him, he can read my mind. It's I don't think Washington's the worst team I've ever seen. I just don't think they're a playoff team. And the Packers clearly have problems, but they've also got some ability and some experience, and they're a better team than Washington. So now I end up in a situation where I'm going to finish picking all four road teams, which is really...
Well, they're all favorites. As of now, Green Bay has moved to a slight favorite, so it's not...
Here's the problem with Green Bay. Wherever they go next week, if they go, I think they lose because they do have problems. I'm not saying that Green Bay is that good a team. They're certainly not the team we thought they were going to be at the start of the year or when they were 6-0. And what was really troubling to me is in terms of that last loss, I blame Aaron Rodgers more than anybody else. Everybody else is looking at the Jordy Nelson injury and the offensive line and Eddie Lacy, and Eddie Lacy's been a huge disappointment. But Rodgers has actually gotten progressively worse the last couple of weeks, and I thought that he was the reason they lost the Minnesota game, or at least didn't get it to overtime. Now, some of that is because he's got happy feet at this point. He's gun-shy. He's been taking a beating. But I don't think that matters that much in this game. I look for Eddie Lacy to go beast mode. I think it's time. I think it's what they want to do. I think it's the best way to help that offensive line is let them run block as much as possible. And the defense is capable of playing pretty well. They need to get Sam Shields healthy. I don't know if he's going to be able to go or not. But even without him, Kirk Cousins is a hot quarterback. I get that. But their running game and Morris and Jones have kind of disappeared. And their defense, you know, they're not very good against the run. I mean, they can rush the passer. There's no question about that. There's so much to me that says that the Packers are kind of the royalty in this game, if you will, and they find a way to get it done.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick against Aaron Rodgers. I can't do it. I know he's had the season, as Hub just described, that it's hard to do it in a wild card game. I don't care where it is. And Washington's pass rush does not scare me either. And that's where Green Bay is weak on that offensive line. I think they could take advantage of that a little bit.
I might argue with you about that. You Ryan Kerrigan can get after the quarterback.
That's true. I don't see a whole. I mean, Carricker can. I mean, they have the weapons they can. They just it hasn't been as imposing as maybe.
Murphy wasn't bad either. Now that I think about it, yeah.
You just ask Kyle Long about that.
Pretty big play.
Well, as we wrap up the show now, Hub, you missed the poll earlier, so I'll fill you in. Your best guess of Jeffrey and Forte as of where we stand right now today, taping this on January 5th.
I don't think there's any way that Alshon Jeffrey gets out of town. It was interesting that Ryan Pace went out of his way to talk about it always being to the team's advantage to do a longer-term deal. I don't agree with that. I think this is an instance where the franchise tag is to the team's advantage because you can still do the longer-term deal next year. But that he pointed that out did strike me as I'm wondering, does he not want to use the franchise tag? I don't see how he can afford not to. But either way, I think that Jeffrey is along. Is back. I don't want to cop out on you guys. I have no feel for the Forte thing. I can't tell what they're thinking. I will tell you this. I think it's going to hurt them and cost them if he gets away. I think people are way too high on Jeremy Langford, and I like him. I think he's a nice prospect. But based on what we saw this year, there's no way he projects as Matt Forte. And Kadeem Carey is never going to be more than a number three if he's that at all. And so I don't think you overpay for Forte. I don't think you give him a 3 or 4 year deal at $5 million a year, but I think you do have to think about giving him more than Frank Gore got last year, which is the comparative, because he's worth a lot more to you and he's better at this stage of his career. But guys, it's not that I'm copping out. I'm being honest. I have no feel right now for what the Bears are going to do. I'd only be guessing and tossing a coin if I said I thought he was going to be gone or be back.
I think we're pretty much on the same page there. I think we don't have a good guess in that. And then the last question, Hub, as we wrap up the show, how much money would Chicago football have to raise for you to do the Brian Urlacher hair treatment?
None. I've had a couple companies offer to do it for free if I would do their commercials, but Brian and I have a little different opinion on that one. I've had the opportunity in the past, and my answer is this is the way God built me. This is the way I'm staying. And it's and by the way, I've seen some bad ones too. I don't know about Brian's. I haven't taken a close look yet, but I've seen some bad transplants.
It's pretty
bad. Luck, I'd get a bad one, and so I'll stay with bald.
You make it work, Hub. You definitely do.
I don't have a choice.
And that was a bit of a jarring way to wake up yesterday morning, seeing Brian Urlacher with hair.
I have a question, though, guy. Yes. Wasn't he blonde when he had his own hair?
I think he was.
I seem to recall him being blonde. Now he's a brunette.
I thought he was.
So that's a little weird to me, too.
Who knows? Well, that'll do it for this week's edition of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Certainly hit every facet that we could on the show. We will come back in the next week or two. Maybe the Bears have a different offensive coordinator. Maybe it's still Adam Gase. We can talk about the other free agents to be and preview the Senior Bowl where Arthur and I will be. Thank you to our guest, Danny Ecker of Crane Chicago, talking Alshon Jeffrey and Bears business, Chicago sports business with us. For my co-host, Arthur Arkish, for our closer, Hub Arkish, for executive producer Dan Mott, I am Kevin Fishman. For all of us at Chicago Football, thanks for listening. We will see you down the road.